Yeah, and the reason I do that is because there's been, you know, what do you call it, what's the word, commonalities between all the talks.
Yeah.
And my thought is to potentially, at one point, maybe have like a 5-minute video done. This way people can see that before the presentation. And also, you know, since it's repetitive, mm-hmm. when I push the podcast, what I'll probably do is take out, or what I have been doing is take out the beginning.
Okay.
But then you'll start talking and it kind of doesn't make sense. It needs to be set up.
Right.
So this way for like the audience, I can kind of do a, this is what intro. I talk about beforehand with everyone. And now here's the podcast.
Cool.
So my first question for everyone is, have you been to the website? Do you have any questions?
I have. And,
okay. Great.
I looked around a little bit.
Okay. And you don't have to, the podcast or the our conversation is meant to be self-sufficient. So, you know, you didn't have to, but that's great. Mm-hmm. So what are your questions?
I don't think I have any.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, but you did look at it a little bit. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
So basically the concept with foresight is that it's kind of a one-size-fits-all approach. And what we'll find out through the course of our conversation is that there are these kind of core triggers that are driving things in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And helping you understand that is what will give you both vocabulary and tools to potentially, you know, better deal with them and hopefully, you know, successfully deal with them, right?
That's super interesting.
Right. So so I'll just start with, you know, what, give me some background on you. I just kind of want to learn who you are, and it could be whatever you think gives me a good picture of you.
Oh, let's see. I guess I could start with, well, I moved up to Portland after I graduated from U of O.
Okay.
And
that's Eugene, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so I moved up here like 6 years ago and sort of like flailed around in outside sales.
Okay. Is it outside sales?
I did, yeah.
And you don't have to give me identifiable information, but like what industry?
Well, I worked in copier sales for a while, for a year. It's kind of brutal. And then I worked in radio ads.
So copier sales was brutal.
Mm-hmm.
How so?
Well, it's essentially like, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's walking door-to-door businesses.
Oh, gotcha.
Just kind of cold calling.
A lot of rejection, a lot of, what do you call it?
Same.
A lot of effort extended.
Yeah. A lot of effort for minimal, I guess, gains.
Right. Sure. No, yeah.
I mean, I guess it depends what industry you're selling for, but.
And some people will thrive on that environment and some people don't. So, you know,
that wasn't
for you.
No, it wasn't.
Right.
But it was for my husband and he does really well in it.
Great.
And.
Is that how you met him?
Uh-huh.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. We met at copier sales. And then I did radio sales for a year.
Right. Advertising stuff.
That was like super not my thing.
Right.
And then I went back to school to do my master's in nutrition.
Interesting. And what was your bachelor's in?
Anthropology.
Okay.
Kind of a major that's not super useful in the real world.
Well, so yes and no, potentially, because
it could be,
I have three kids and I've always told them emotional intelligence is more important than academic intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So if you pick up stuff from anthropology and you very much could, that could be very beneficial to you. But go
cultural.
On. Okay, so you got your nutrition
cultural
degree.
Cultural anthropology, So I got my nutrition degree and now I'm just kind of looking for a job, but.
So you recently graduated?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I graduated in September.
Okay.
But it's been a little bit of a challenge to find a job.
Right. Nutrition is, why is that? I mean, I would think it's a burgeoning field, but maybe not.
Yeah, it is, but it's sort of oversaturated in Portland.
I was going to say, in Portland, sure.
And,
it's like masseuses and you know, mm-hmm. naturopaths and sure.
Yeah. And so, and also you can't take insurance as a master of science in nutrition. You have to be an R&D.
Oh, okay.
And so there's sort of a, practices don't always know how to incorporate you into their business.
Right.
They either have to pay you because you have to charge cash, or they have to, like, a lot of the time they put you in as a 1099.
Okay.
So.
Is your thought to potentially get a you know, the R&D, you said? Or?
No, because I might as well go get my doctorate.
Gotcha.
It's another two years of prereqs.
Right.
And then a year, if I got into the internship, it would be a year.
Right.
So.
A lot of money, a lot of time.
Yeah. And okay. I'm 29, right. And I just don't feel like I have that time.
You want to go, I don't want to go to school for the rest of your life.
Yeah, and okay. I don't want to be in debt, so.
Right. So what was your childhood like growing up? Do you have siblings? You know, what was
only child.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I had a great upbringing. My parents were, I mean, I lived in sort of a not great part of town, but.
Wait, was it Portland or another area?
It was Eugene.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So I gotcha. Okay.
I grew up there and then I went to school there.
Right.
For college.
Okay.
Yeah. Not a lot of money growing up, but.
Okay.
Yeah.
I briefly worked in Eugene. I'm somewhat familiar with it. Okay. I grew up in New York. To me, there's no such thing as a bad neighborhood in all of Oregon, but.
Oh, but, I'm sure that's true. Yeah.
But there's definitely sketchy areas, which are, you don't feel necessarily comfortable at night, and you're a little safer and stuff like that.
Yeah.
How do you like Portland as compared to Eugene? Because, I mean, it is a much bigger city.
Yeah. Well, I live in Lake Oswego.
So you live, Troy?
I live in Lake Oswego.
Okay.
So it's a little bit removed.
Right.
In their own little bubble.
For sure.
Which I like because there's less people.
Right.
And it's cleaner.
Okay.
And, yeah, I like it.
So less people is the city, you know,
city
I'll call it congested to you and kind of overwhelming or?
Yep. Stresses me out.
Okay.
I lived, when I moved up here, I lived like kind of off Burnside and all the noises just sort of like kept me up all.
Yeah. Everything's relative.
Yeah.
I grew up across the street from a train tracks. So
oh my gosh.
I could sleep through a train.
Well, I guess, yeah, if you grow up like that, then you are used to it.
Right. And that's a really good, just, you know, of course, the general thing with life is you know, you get used to what you get used to, right? And your brain and your whole patterns are all wired for a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, you know, it gives me some background and why don't we get into what you're doing and maybe we'll talk more about the background stuff. But you had a conflict or conflicts that you're experiencing that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that is my conflict.
Okay. Which is what?
Is just sort of a disjointed career path because, you know, outside sales versus trying to get into the holistic healthcare.
Right.
It's sort of just...
So they're very different, you know. So why you tried sales a couple times. What made you, what drove you into that?
Sales?
Yeah.
Drove me into...
Like why did you take those two jobs? Did you like talking to people? Like, what were the appeals of those jobs?
They're really... What I was trying to do is... Well, when I moved up here, I got a job as a teacher's assistant.
Right.
And I did that for a year. And then they laid me off from that job.
Right. Was that college level?
It was a teacher's for 3 to 6 year olds at Montessori school.
Okay, so super young kids.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I got laid off from there, and so I had to find a job like as soon as I could.
Right.
So I had to pretty much take the first job that I found, and I applied to it, and I was like, yeah, I could do great in business. I'll make a lot of money. And I wasn't really thinking about like what I actually like to do.
Right.
And,
which is fine when you're in your 20s. I mean, we all kind of, a lot of people find themselves, I know I did in my 20s, kind of figuring out what mm-hmm. worked for me. And it makes sense. Sales, you know, tends to be a high turnover, mm-hmm. you know, area.
Yeah.
So they take on a lot of people and whoever works, works. And they don't necessarily care about that.
Yeah,
but
they don't.
That doesn't really make it easier for you.
Yeah. So then I quit that job and got, because I didn't like my boss and he was really just terrible. So I quit and went on to Alpha Media, and then after I worked there, they laid me off there.
Okay.
And so...
What drove you into nutrition?
Well, my dad brought it up to me when I was sort of, like, sad and like, gosh, what kind of job am I going to get now?
Right.
Like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life kind of thing. He was like, look around your house and see what interests you, see what you like to do.
Right.
And so it was mostly nutrition books, you know, cooking. And I was watching, like, some food documentaries and all that kind of thing because I was into it. Well, I am into it. and so it just clicked, and I was like, yeah, you're right. So I got a part-time job at Williams-Sonoma and a part-time job at, in UNM, the school that I went to, because I knew if I worked there, I could get a job or... I could get my school paid for.
Right.
So I did that.
Okay, so I see a couple patterns which may, you know, which are probably going to be helpful to you. So I'll bring up, I'll introduce you to two things. Have you ever heard of the phrase psychological resilience?
Yeah.
Okay, so and what does that mean to you?
It means sort of, I guess, having the power to be resilient throughout your experiences.
Right. Like, so basically to handle adversity.
Yeah.
Right? So potentially, and you know, you can give me, and this is kind of where we'll go back into your background. So potentially being an only child in a, you know, a very uneventful life, right? Mm-hmm. To some extent, you may not have been grown in that area because you didn't have to deal with adversity, right? Things were pretty straightforward for you.
Yeah.
And what, you know, one of the disadvantages of growing up in, let's call it a perfect childhood, and I'm not saying yours mm-hmm. was, but...
That's pretty much, yeah.
Right. One of the disadvantages is that, well, you don't, you know, life normally isn't like that, right?
Yeah.
You're... When you're growing up, you're building a model in your head of the world, right?
Yeah.
And if that model accurately reflects the world, then everything's great, right? If there's too much contention in that that model, then you expect contention in a world that isn't there. And you can kind of look for trouble and maybe mm-hmm. even sabotage yourself.
True.
That's not going on. It doesn't seem like it's going on with you.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of on the other end of the spectrum, which is maybe you didn't deal with a lot of adversity. So now that you are having to come up with these decisions, you're not really sure how to do that. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what psychological was like. So you know, probably didn't have the ability to build that up as much in the childhood as other people.
True.
So now we'll switch to the foresight side of things. So foresight talks about your consciousness has two processes, self-esteem and self-confidence. And that's pretty much what you do all day long. These two processes function and they help you determine all your behavior. The self-esteem one is probably fine with you. And that's basically, how do you look at the past? Do I like myself? Do I value myself? Right? If you grow up in a, you know, in a nurturing household and you're allowed to explore to some extent and not kind of constrained or manipulated and, you know, limited into what you can do, you'll develop a healthy self-esteem. So you like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good because you need both of these processes in order to drive your behavior. Self-esteem gives you the desire to act for yourself. And then self-confidence gives you the ability, right? On the ability side, there are two things that you need to learn. So self-esteem, it's do I like myself, do I value myself? On self-confidence is do I have discretion and do I have perseverance? So the area that I'm hearing is discretion, which is do I know what to do?
Yeah.
Right? So the way that you build it up, you know, when you're growing up, generally is two different ways. You build up discretion by having boundaries, right? So you kind of allow to do things, including mess up, right? Get into trouble, so to speak, right? So if you're not really given a lot of that, and, you know, it could be, you know, parents will sometimes view as, I'm doing the right thing, I'm protecting my child, I'm, you know, and there is good aspects to it. But to some extent, your kid needs to kind of get into trouble.
Yeah.
Right?
I never really got into trouble.
Okay. And that's right. So that's part of, you know, it's one of those sad kind of catch-22s to some extent, right? It's like, you know, things were so good and so easy for you that you didn't get to learn to be tough, right? The other area, and, you know, if you're not kind of exploring, then you're not going to probably hit the other area, which is when you do something that you should do, but you fail, being able to work through it. And that means, you know, you're, I don't know, making a craft when you're younger, you mess it up, and then what do you do to repair that? And is there any, you know, it starts as really simple things when you're a kid, 3 or 4, and then gets some more and more complicated things when you get older.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe I'll ask you real quick. Do you feel you have perseverance? So once you actually get something picked, are you good at following through on it? Or, you know, do you kind of waver and vacillate and question yourself? How is your perseverance skill?
I think my perseverance is good.
Right. Okay.
Because I put myself through all my prereqs.
Right.
And while working 2 part-time jobs.
Right.
So, like, getting my degree beforehand was actually a 3-year process.
Right. Okay.
Because I worked at the school.
Right.
I was a front desk person. And then I got promoted to do development, in which...
So once you get going...
They promised me, like, a full ride.
Right.
They were like, yes, if you work here, you will get a full ride. You can do your master's degree.
Right.
And then they... laid me off when I got back from my honeymoon.
Right.
And so they gave me a free term.
Yeah.
But I was expecting, like, I worked really hard at that job, and I thought, like, I wanted to work there for my life. And
did they, you know, breach their agreement, you think?
Yeah. All right. But there was nothing in writing.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Which is, yeah.
It's a little entitled for me to say that, but I also feel like they led me to believe this thing from working there.
And you know, this would kind of be, you know, also a... And I don't want to necessarily phrase things good or bad. It is what it is, right? One of the symptoms, and something I can relate to myself, is when you grow up in a healthy household, you expect that. Someone says something, and you expect them to follow through on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, in you know the real world, people can be a lot more scrupulous, right?
Mm-hmm.
You talked about a boss that you didn't very you know think you know well of. Not surprising. A lot of them don't behave well, right? They kind of take advantage of the position. Maybe they're abusive, inappropriate, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, these are things we, you know, that do occur in our society. So to some extent, you know, the warning signs that other people might be aware of, I know me to some extent, and you also as well, we're not seeing them, right? We don't necessarily, we're not skeptical enough at times.
Yeah.
Okay. So as far as the discretion thing, so now I have a couple questions about insights. Going out to order food, are you indecisive at times?
Oh, well, food. I mean, I'm a super like food freak, so right. Yeah.
So yes, you are, or no, you
aren't. I'm super indecisive about food.
Okay. So right. And now that's a discretion thing, right? You're not sure what to pick. So you kind of vacillate a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you a procrastinator with things?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a Libra.
Okay. So you can tell me you're a Libra, right? I didn't know that you were a Libra. I knew you're a procrastinator. Here's why, right?
Yeah.
Because, and you know, the what do you call it, the phrase or the adverb that's typically used is anxiety, right?
Mm-hmm.
I hate that phrase. The reason why, because it's not really helpful, okay? But here's effectively what's going on, right? Growing up, when you're given boundaries, you learn this is, I should do this and I shouldn't do this, right? And that starts at the first 1.0 version of your brain, your emotional part is in place by age 3, right? So you need to necessarily have that skill kind of the first base of it in 3, and then you reinforce it for the next 15 years,
mm-hmm.
right? If you don't, then the whole question of what should I do, what I shouldn't do becomes a big dilemma, as it is in your instance, right? So, a little, let me give you a little, insight into what emotions are. And I'll ask first, what do you think, like, how would you describe emotions? And then I'll try to qualify that further.
How would I describe emotions?
Yeah, like what does an emotion mean to you? What is an emotion?
I guess a feeling of, I mean, it could be positive, negative, it could be a lot of things.
Exactly.
It's just a feeling.
Right. All right, so now let me give you an insight into that, and this will start to help you kind of understand what's going on with you, okay? Our brain recognizes patterns, right? And then it draws conclusions. It looks at all the things that are going on in the world, and it has this model,
mm-hmm.
and says, oh, that means this, right? What an emotion is that our brain will draw a conclusion about something, right? And we will feel it, right? There'll literally be a physical sensation. Sometimes it could be positive, euphoric. Sometimes it could be negative, like adrenaline, and you know, we need to do something, right? The important part is that you're actually feeling a physical sensation before you're aware of it. Hmm. So your brain has drawn a conclusion, and now, later on, you're aware of it. So you're left with the fact of your awareness is trying to make sense of, oh, I feel something, right? For you, it's when you're presented with a decision, you're going to feel tense. You're going to feel unsure. You're going to feel kind of this cloudiness, right? Probably a negative. It's going to be some type of negative emotion, right? So literally your brain is sending chemicals throughout your body because you haven't built this discretion thing, right? So now all of a sudden your awareness is trying to make sense of this sensation. So you're trying to bridge the two.
Okay.
And what happens is that you're saying, oh, I feel uncertain and I need to make sense of that. So I'm trying to order something at dinner. So why am I uncertain about something, right? Well, the reason you're uncertain about something is because you haven't made a lot of decisions and lived with them, you know, for better or worse, right? You haven't gotten punished. So you kind of have like your decision-making system is muted less than it should be. So what you'll want to do is here's the thing. When you're growing up, you know, typically you're going to get into trouble by someone else. Someone's going to exercise that you should do or shouldn't do this, Right? You have to build up that system on your own. Certainly your partner, your husband can help you do that. But in the end, what you want to do is make the decision and suffer the consequences, right? So when you're ordering dinner and you know, there are all kinds, I can get into specifics as to how you can do that. Mm-hmm. But certainly with the lesser decisions, you want to make mistakes, right? That sounds counterintuitive potentially, but you want to make mistakes. And here's why. What's going to happen with a lot of, and certainly with the lesser things, is what's the big deal, right? If you go out to dinner and you order something and you don't like it, what happens?
I send it back.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't necessarily recommend sending it back because, and here's a funny thing. And this is kind of a quick aside. I'll tell you why. You don't want to make your problem someone else's problem. Huh. Right? Right? If we order something and we don't like it, and I think that's kind of an important thing, and this might be a good tool for you, right? And the reason being is that if you send it back, potentially you made a bad decision, mm-hmm. right? But you're not getting the consequences for it. You need to have the consequences. And that's literally how you're going to build your discretion. So, and you know, the ordering dinner is probably a really good analogy. And this might say, you know, I'm going to release this podcast and we're going to play it back. And you have the ability to play it back, right? Mm-hmm. So this is really an interesting, you know, point that we kind of come to here. Here's what I want you to do, right? I want you to punish yourself. And I don't mean that in like a masochistic way, right? But I want you to think about, okay, I need to make the decision for better or worse. Maybe give yourself a time limit on decisions, right? Instead of procrastinating on something, take action. Because here's the thing. Thinking about something is not going to change your behavior, your thought processes, which is not going to change your behavior, right? What you really need to do is experience something and have it come back in through your five senses, and you'll be able to write new pathways, right? Hmm. So you didn't get consequences growing up, potentially because you weren't given the ability to, you know, do something wrong, or maybe that was taken care of by someone else, right? But you literally need to pay the consequences of your decisions, right? And that's going to kind of suck at first, potentially, right? You're going to go out to dinner, you're going to order a $15 plate, you're not going to like it, and you're going to, and in the past, you sent it back. The problem is that you didn't learn anything from that.
Dinner is a good comparison, though, because
it's just an analogy. Because here's the thing:
I'm like really bad at, like, I love good food. I cook all the time.
Right.
I can cook a better meal than I can order a lot of the time.
Right.
Most of the time, it makes me feel bad to eat out, so I don't want to eat something that's going to make me feel like crap.
Right.
So I think for most people that might be a good analogy, but for me, I'm like hyper aware
right.
of food.
Well, so here's the thing. So hyper aware is a really good way of phrasing it, right? What we'll do is, so our emotions are in place, the 1.0 version, by age 3. Our memory zone starts until we're age 6. So whatever mechanism is kind of going on, we're not necessarily going to be aware of what that mechanism is. And what's potentially going to happen is that we're going to develop maladaptive strategies to justify poor behavior. Hmm. You're probably going to hate me for saying this, but I'd rather... Here's the thing. My actual goal is to help you with where you're at, right? And I can tell you the underlying mechanism of where you're at. Okay?
What's that?
And the underlying mechanism is you have this issue making decisions because you didn't necessarily build up that I should do this and I shouldn't do this. So let's think about someone. So for example, the food thing, right? Okay. Saying I'm hyper aware of it. Are you hyper aware? It's possible, right? But in the end, what I see as an outside observer is that I have this indecision and want to come up with a justification for sending it back. Because it's not good to send things back all the time, right?
Yeah. Oh, I don't do it all the time.
Right?
Yeah.
But enough. You said you're hyper aware.
Yeah, I just like to, like, I mean, I definitely don't send it back all the time. But
But enough.
I've suffered the consequences.
Right.
But, you know, I ordered something at Vsauce, and it was just the worst. Like, the potatoes were overfried. The apple butter wasn't butter. It was just, like, cut up apples.
Right.
And, you know, all these things. And I just kind of ate part of it and right. dealt with it, but...
Yeah, so the kind of the MO with you most likely is going to be a sensitivity to certain things,
mm-hmm.
right? And you can go ahead and you can look at it one of two ways. You could look at it as either, that's how I am, I'm sensitive to things and I need to make all these picky things, or you can look at it that some anxiety or some indecision as to what to do is driving this. And I'm justifying and enabling that indecision.
It's probably true.
Right? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And that's really good for you. And I'm really hesitant to say these things. Here's why. Especially in an environment, really everyone in society, with the exception of people who've gone through really bad upbringings, right? Life is pretty easy for us here. As far as, you know, like yeah. we're not being eaten by saber-toothed tigers.
No.
Not that we'd ever coexisted with them anyway. But, you know, bombs aren't going off all the time. We live yeah. a pretty simple, basic existence, right?
For sure.
Right? And the way that humans are, or all animals are designed, pain avoidance is huge, right? And one of the stories I like to tell people is, like, imagine there's an itch in the back of your head. Try not to scratch that for 5 minutes. You might become consumed with it. I probably would. It's really hard not to scratch something, right? One of the other things is, as I say, hunger, right? Try to be hungry, feel hungry, and then sit with that for an hour and try not to think about it. For a lot of people, it drives them crazy, right? Hmm. And what an itch and what hunger really are really subtle forms of pain, right? They're in effect a discomfort that we don't like, right? Similarly, with emotions, it's the same exact way. Right? Mm. Our brain is, you know, we're presented with something, it's drawing that conclusion. It's now sending some kind of discomfort within us. So the result is that when we feel something, and including feeling bad, it's a huge driver for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So as a result, we want to avoid feeling that discomfort. And we'll come up with either adaptive strategies or in some instances, maladaptive strategies. We'll do something that we don't want to do.
Like medications or...
Medication is a perfect example. If you want to know where the opioid crisis is coming from, that's one of the huge drivers of it, right?
Exactly.
I feel bad. I want to feel euphoric. I'm going to take a pill for it.
Mm-hmm.
Really bad, right?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. It's okay to do things for a certain period of time, provided you understand why you're doing them,
mm-hmm.
right? Like certainly it's the old crutch and cast approach, right? You need to get better, so that's going to help you get through it. However, you need to have the long-term objective. So if you're taking the opioid and, you know, you're not... you're not changing your desensitization to pain, then you're in big trouble because you're going to keep taking the opioid.
Right.
So it's knowing, oh, okay, I need to make myself comfortable with the discomfort. And that's kind of the theme that I'm recommending to you, right? Is getting comfortable with, and, you know, I don't want to belabor the whole, you know, food thought, but that's the analogy, which is what you literally want to do is instead of prolonging the decision, right? Which is avoiding the pain of making the decision, right? The making decision kind of makes you feel there's a negativity associated with it, right? Make the decision, suffer the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you go through that process, including making bad decisions, you're beginning to build your discretion system, or you're building it further.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's come up with some other areas. So you're looking for work now, and you said you're kind of having problems. Tell me some of the thought processes that you're going through, you know, and just think out loud, you know, why you're struggling to maybe find work. Talk about that.
Well, I think it's kind of hard for me too because my husband is so opposite on the extreme end. So like,
why is that bad?
Because I'm kind of struggling to find my way, and
does he give you a hard time?
Sometimes, yeah.
Okay. All right, so here's an important thing, and this is really key, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about there's two aspects of the self-confidence thing, right?
Right.
Doing what you should do, and succeeding or failing, right? So there's the perseverance thing. And it's as important for him to understand the emotional aspect as it is of you. The reason being is that you have to build up your discretion system and your perseverance system.
Yeah.
He also, as a partner, has to help you do it. So if he's has a problem with you making mistakes, then that's a problem.
Yeah.
You have to do it on your own, and you have to fail. You're going to fail, and sometimes you're going to, you know, it's going to be the wrong decision, and that's fine. Then you put that to your list. But it's also sometimes you can be doing the right thing, and, you know, for example, like taking a job.
Well, yeah. Well, the reason he has a problem with it is because it's not only my mistakes, it's he's paying for them.
Right.
That's kind of what he looks
at. How so?
Well, he paid for half of my school.
Right.
And kind of looks at it as like, he didn't really want me to go in the to begin with.
Right.
And now that I can't really find a job in the field, it's kind of like, well, he's questioning whether or not it was a good investment.
Right.
And yeah.
You know, it's kind of a delicate area, but to some extent, it was funny, I've thought about, I don't necessarily want to get involved in partners counseling. But to some extent, that is part of the equation. And, you know, I don't know him, and you can give me some insight into who he is. And, you know, that, you know, that'll be one side of him, and my potentially talking with all of you another side. At some point, you have to recognize that, and I mean both of you, that you're a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And his goal is for you to be successful. And if he's doing something that undermines that, he's undermining himself.
Right.
Right? So, you know, I kind of don't want to get too involved in the details, because it's really, I don't want to, assist with a specific situation. I'm going to give you more kind of global stuff.
Yeah.
But to some extent, if, you know, your partner has to know who you are, you're an indecisive person, there's going to be a penalty that's paid for that. It might be financial at times. Tough, that's part of the equation. Here's the thing. Everything's a yin and a yang, right? There's also, with your personality type, there's an energy level and an excitement and a, you know, kind of a liveliness that also goes with that. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He gets the benefit of that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
it's funny. No, it's cute. I like the way you respond to, and it's cool. You're thinking about it, and that's good. You know, so in the end, it's a yin and a yang. There are pros and cons to it, but as a partnership, what you would never really want to do is make it adversarial. And I guess that's kind of why I took this tangent, is that it's really important to from day one that, or I said from the ground level, is to understand that it's a partnership and you guys need to work together.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's becoming adversarial. It may not be. It may be just in its infancy and it's starting to get like that. But in the end, you know, he as a person and you know, everyone needs to, I know who you are already, right? And if I was a friend of yours and we were going out to dinner, I would say, hey, look, you take a time making dinner. Let's give you a minute. And you might hate the dinner, and that's what's going to happen, right? Maybe we'll go to another restaurant. I wouldn't send it back because I'd feel bad sending it back to the restaurant, right? To some extent, that's kind of like them paying the price for your making a decision that's something you didn't like. You could say that there's something wrong with the meal. That may or may not be right. To me, I would just not do that. I would go to another restaurant. I'll go home and make something for yourself that you know that you're going to like, right?
Mm-hmm.
This way you get to win that way. But, you know, as a friend, I would help you. Okay, you're indecisive. What can we do to help you make you more decisive? And it's whatever team growing, you know, mechanism it is.
Yeah.
And it becomes and the nice thing about it is that for you and him, it'll actually bring you closer together, right? Because when you two work on a problem and there's I can be myself, right? I can tell you I'm not really sure what to do here. And you can work through a solution, that'll bring you a lot closer. Again, not that you're not close now, but
yeah.
You know, does everything I'm saying make sense so far? And I kind of don't want to talk your ear off to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's certainly, I understand, you know, that there is this concern on his part for financing. So that's a reasonable, concern.
Request.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Request.
To find a job. Yeah.
Right. So, what's a way that you potentially work through that with him?
Well,
how do you balance those two aspects?
Me finding a job.
Yeah.
And him not. Well, I just am looking for a job.
Right.
Simple.
So is it open-ended?
Like looking for any kind of job?
Yeah, like the amount of time. You know, like is there a pressure thing that you have to find a job by a certain point?
Well, it was supposed to be November 15th.
Okay.
But I have interviews next week, and it's past that. So.
Right. So you're getting interviews, which is good. You're making progress, right?
Yeah.
What is the, you know, I mean, it's hard. It's funny when I have these conversations, I admittedly stammer. And the reason being is I'm trying to process a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find a resolution. And that's why I'm trying to figure out how did that happen.
Yeah.
And again, I kind of don't want to be specific, but to some extent I want to, you know, come up with a pattern that will work for you guys and for you really. That you can use going forward.
Yeah.
Well,
he's sort of finding a new job right now too.
Right.
Because he's not happy at his current job.
Right. Right. So he feels he's unable to do that at this point. Maybe because you don't have. So is it you want to get a job first and then he can maybe look for his and.
No, it's more like he just wants to get out of his job ASAP. Right. So he has interviews this week too.
Right. Okay. So he's doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. Right.
But he's. Definitely going to take a pay cut, no matter what job he switches to.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that's why I need to find a job, too.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So there's pressure on and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like he's sticking out his job, you know, he might be a little upset with you because he feels like he's sticking out his job longer because you don't have one right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've been having to use his money for everything.
Right. Well, it's your money. Right. Although I know it's funny. I went through this. I was married for 17 years. I had three kids. When they talk about couples and issues that hurt them, it's the typical ones that you might imagine. Mm-hmm. It's having a child. It's a close relative getting sick. It's buying a house. You know, being unemployed for a period of time.
Yeah.
And really what it is that it says whether or not we're resilient as a couple. Right? Because that's really a good test of, you know, if everything is fine, a bunch of people can get along forever, right? But both as individuals and well as couples.
Yeah.
So it's really a good test and to me, I also look at it as also a really good opportunity for you two, right? Because right now you go, you know, I assume he's pretty young as well. You're in your 20s, I guess, right? Doing 20. The math. Quick with the math, huh? It's a really good opportunity for you guys to work through something because in the grand scheme of things, do you own your house or are you renting?
Yeah.
Right?
Own it.
Okay.
Last year.
So okay.
We want to move out.
Is there any concern, I'm also doing is trying to more from a figurative than a specific standpoint. Mm-hmm. Are you worried that you're going to lose the house?
We're just worried that it was too big of a purchase for us at the time.
Okay.
It was too much
house. But there's no imminent worry about losing the house. And maybe that's part of the pressure mm-hmm. of the financial thing, right?
It is. Because we want to move out next year.
Right. You know, part of helping things is when you are worried about making a decision, we get really invested in the ramifications of what that decision will be.
Right.
Right? And what's really important, certainly here in America, is the old first world problems kind of thing, right?
Oh, it's definitely first world
problems. You guys are living in a nice neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Right? If you're making a lot of this moment, then you both need to dial it back and say, holy crap, we got up this morning and a bomb didn't go off down the street, right?
Yeah.
Right. I'm not fearing for my life when I'm walking from my car to the house. I have a nice car, right? Do you have a nice vehicle, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have a nice phone and, you know, life is pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, that'll help perhaps give you both some of the,
I try to remind him of those things.
To say,
he's more of the type that gets wrapped up in the first world problems.
Right.
And I'm more of the one that's like, I'm so thankful to live here and be with you and do-do-do.
Right.
He's like, but we only have blah, blah, blah in our bank account.
Right.
And I'm like,
So here's the thing. You know, it's a question of everything that all these things that come up are valid concerns.
Yeah.
Right? Going out and getting a meal and whether or not you like it, that's a valid concern, right? Whether or not you guys are making enough money to buy a house, that and have enough money to bank, that's all a valid concern, right? And you want to have these concerns because that makes you take action. And that's kind of the key of a lot of this, right?
Yeah.
It's the emotion is should be driving your behavior. It shouldn't be your behavior. When emotion becomes a behavior, then that starts to be a problem, right? So if you're actually starting to fight and maybe saying negative things and perhaps not working together on it, then it's a problem, right? So these are all valid complaints. So it's making sure that you guys use them as opportunities. They should be, they're challenges to overcome.
Yeah.
And you two are working together and it's how do we figure out how to kind of balance these two different personality types in our situations.
Yep.
So I guess, you know, where are you at? Did you feel you've gotten some helpful information? Do you have some more questions at this point? The things that you'd like to talk about? I mean, we kind of, you know, I don't know if I gave you enough meat to be beneficial to you at this point. Do you feel you have some tools? Do you have some more questions?
I guess once you make a decision, I mean, ultimately I make decisions every day. It's just a matter of if they're good ones.
Right. And they're fine because every time you make a bad decision, that's great. Because for you, you didn't get to make enough bad decisions growing up. And it's going to sound, you know, it's kind of like, you know, there was the old, when my kids were young, do we put them in daycare now and they're going to come home sick all the time because there's a petri dish in the day school, right, of all kinds of germs, right? Or what happens is that you can keep them out of preschool and then you put them in the kindergarten and they're sick for the whole first year. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yeah.
You know, right? So it's not unlike that, right? To some extent, you know, you didn't get a lot of germs when you were growing up. So mm-hmm. You're going to get more colds now. You're going to have more, you know, you're going to make more bad decisions now. But in general, you're making them in a nice neighborhood and in a pretty comfortable situation. But in the end, you're going to have to, I guess the best thing I could say is be okay with making mistakes and work through the pain, both of you. And that's probably the best takeaway that I can give to you.
Yeah. If,
you know, I would say to him, look, honey, this is what has to happen, right? I need to build my discretion system. We need to work through the pain. If the pain becomes an issue for both of you, then that's a problem, right? And that's, if the pain does become a problem, then there is something that you're not looking at right from the relationship standpoint, right? The whole point of being in a relationship is not that so it's going to be perfect, so that everything's going to be great. It's right. How do we help each other mm-hmm. get through these things and grow at the same time?
Yeah.
And the way that you grow is by experiencing the pain together, right? Uh-huh. So, you know, I would say to some extent, you know, he's got to get more comfortable with the financial pain, right?
Yeah.
You know, you don't have enough in the bank, that sucks, right? And that's the way this year is going to go, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. And, you know, you sit down with your meal at home or something like that, and you say, we're going to figure this out, and this is so unimportant.
Yeah.
Because right now, you're both probably, he's also in his 20s, I think. I can't remember if I answered that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's going to be really important because as you go through, you know, hopefully you're married 30, 40, 50 years, right? These things now, if you can work through these things, you're going to be able to deal with the problems later on.
Yeah.
Because right now, these are super small. And that's kind of maybe the carrot that you should both use. Maybe that'll help him become a little more comfortable.
Yeah.
And saying, look, we need to learn how to get comfortable with pain, both of us,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
We live in a pretty privileged society, and I mean all of us, not you guys in particular. We all do.
Yeah.
It's pretty good here in America.
I guess, overall, we have a great relationship, a great marriage. I think my main thing is, like, he's super successful, and I don't feel as successful.
Right.
Kind of, you know.
So is there some, so now that becomes kind of a self-talk thing. You know, it's one of the catch 22s of, you know, being with someone who's good, right? Sometimes that reflects negatively on you. Wow, I feel like, you know, he's, pulling more of the weight than I am. That kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Right. When you met, were you at school together?
We met at a job.
Oh, that's right. The copier job. Okay, right? So you were at the job and you weren't doing so well and you left the job, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you had another job and you left that job. And at what point did you get married?
I got laid off.
Yeah. At what point did you get married?
A year and a half ago.
Okay. So here's the thing. He knew the package he was getting, Right. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I think you're a great package, right? And most people, most everyone is, right?
Yeah.
Right? So the thing is that, you know, there's, you know, are you, whatever weight you're not pulling, you're doing fine, right? So, you know, I'm hoping there's not, you know, any questioning whether or not you know, is he pulling more weight? Yeah. That's the way partnerships work. There's a financial component and there's an emotional component, right? We don't, unfortunately, tend to value that emotional component. Right. And maybe it sounds like you're pretty damn supportive. Right. You know, like you're saying, I'm very happy to be with you and so on. And I guess I'll end with this. Women tend to have self, you know, you're a very typical relationship.
Yeah.
Women tend to have self-confidence issues. Right. The estrogen makes you very nurturing and supportive and mostly supportive. Right. So you bring that to the equation. Right. Him as a typical male is really good at doing.
Yeah.
And that means that he's good at having a job and making money, but not always so good at the nurturing emotional support, right? The thing that in our society, and this kind of is a microcosm of what's going on in America, unfortunately, we don't value the emotional part as much as we should.
Right.
And we really need to put them on a par with each other, right? Mm-hmm. So pulling the weight financially, maybe you're not pulling as much as him. I'm guessing probably emotionally, you're pulling more weight than him. And to that he needs to understand that you're doing that, and that's just as valuable as the financial part.
Interesting.
That's a really good conclusion, and I'm going to kind of, you know, I guess wrap it up there. I mean, yeah. You know, we've spoken for enough time, but you know, I will definitely emphasize that, and that's this. Like I said, this is a great microcosm of our world today, right?
Right.
We're in a capitalistic society, and this is huge emphasis on how smart you are and your academics and how much money you can make.
Yeah.
But in the end, you need to go home and feel good about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's not happening, then it doesn't matter how much money you have. And if you have a partner that's making you feel better about the world and life, you need to value that more than the money. Sell your house in your nice neighborhood, buy a shack.
Yeah.
You can do that today. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's kind of a good way of looking at it. Hey, we have a solution. We can live in a crappier neighborhood.
Well, that is our solution.
Right. And that's fine, you know. Certainly, you know, you might have the advantage of living in a really nice neighborhood to moving to a nice neighborhood. And that might be it, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, but the key is to remember is that the emotional part is just as important as the financial part. So the pulling the weight, yeah, there are different areas.
Mm-hmm.
Financially, maybe you're going to catch up. And as long as you both get the emotional part right, you're going to get there, because you need to be given that comfort of making mistakes and having consequences. Because over time, you're going to build up that discretion. And, you know, if you guys decide to have kids, whatever your later life is going to be, the more of the discretion that you build up now, the less procrastinating you do, the less the indecision becomes, and you'll see that from year to year, the better off your future life will be together.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Is that good?
That's good. Yeah.
All right, cool. I guess here we'll end it there.